You're listening to the Barry Egan Tapes on News Talk. I'm Barry Egan from the Sunday Independent. I'm talking with Dermot Gavin. Dermot, thanks for coming in.
Lovely to be here, Barry.
Dermot, you're doing incredible stuff all over the world on BBC, making gardens, you know, here, there and everywhere. But just take me back to the early 90s. Like, things weren't going good. You were bouncing checks all over Dublin. You seemed like a nervous breakdown waiting to happen. Can you take us back to that moment?
Yeah, I suppose I grew up in the suburbs of Dublin. Quite oddly, around the time I was leaving school, I had a very definite quest, a very definite dream. For some reason, I wanted to make gardens, but I wanted to make gardens that were different. I was not enchanted by the conformity of suburbia. I loved looking at what was happening elsewhere, whether it was David Bowie in terms of music, magazine design, something like The Face, or even Vincent Hanley, MTV USA, with that pop video thing exploding. Pop art, the whole Warhol thing in New York, watching Debbie Harry on Top of the Pops. All of that was having an effect. And I wanted to be a garden designer. And yet, in Dublin, in Ireland, or indeed in England, or maybe anywhere at that stage, if you wanted to create gardens, you could only create a certain type of garden. Maybe two types of garden.
So was that wrecking your head?
Wrecking my head, absolutely. First of all, I didn't understand why I wanted to push for being different. I had to figure that one out. What was it about me that couldn't relax doing pretty gardens for pretty people? I was able to do those gardens perfectly well. I was able to go to the competitions that used to be held in the RDS and win the gold medals and be celebrated for that week. But it was really doing my head in that I could not express what I wanted to express or explore what I wanted to explore through the design and the building of gardens.
But where was the money going?
Well, I would get fed up midway through a job because I had a battered old radio and I'd go out. Nobody worked harder than me. I'd get up very early in the morning. I'd go to do these gardens. I just adored that notion of garden transformation, taking space and changing it over a 2-day period or a 2-week period. And that's generally what the jobs were. They're either short or kind of medium term. And just the transformation that happened in front of my eyes, I couldn't sleep at night with the excitement. And this was creating relatively sedate but pretty gardens. It wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to explore my art in a different way. So I started doing my work badly. Started even leaving jobs kind of halfway through and never getting paid. I didn't have the money for the rent in Flatland in Rathmines. And
what was that like?
Oh, it was dreadful. You know, it was dreadful because I was beginning to let people down. Left, right and centre. Friends, suppliers, whatever. And this was
in pursuit. Were you actually bouncing checks?
A couple of times, not very dramatically, but a couple of times. I always paid them. So I'd go to a nursery not knowing that I didn't have enough money in the account to pay. And so I ended up not being driven by the business element of things, been only driven by the artistic and craft element of garden creation. And I went through this for about 4, 5, 6 years.
Of being unhappy?
Been unhappy with that element of life. I was still having lots of fun, but I felt my project in life was to create space that was different, to be allowed to take influence from other places. I was watching MTV, I was watching videos. There was one, you know, video on MTV, Michael Jackson dancing down the street for Billie Jean, and every time his foot touched the pavement, it illuminated, it lit up. And I just thought,
why couldn't you do a garden like that?
Why can't we have gardens like that? And everything changed for me in a way. I had seen no gardens like that. I'd seen pop videos like that. I'd seen art like that. I'd seen Roy Lichtenstein wow paintings. I wanted to practice this in a different way. It wasn't for anybody else. It was for me. I wanted to create outdoors. When I was growing up, I looked after the garden at home. I hated it because it was the same as every other garden, with cherry trees, privet hedges and bedding plants. I wanted to do something different. So it was it didn't involve anybody else, but it was to be my way of expression. Creating gardens can be an expensive thing. People had never seen anything new, so obviously there was no market for it. And I ended up having to develop a market for it at home and abroad. I didn't know that was going to work out, so I did get a little bit low about it. I used to go to garden design meetings, you know, gatherings.
What was the lowest point?
The lowest point was a Friday evening and a Saturday morning. Friday evening, I was in the flat. It was a flat share. I hadn't paid the rent. And the guy from RTV Rentals came to repossess a stack system. So the stereo, the tape decks and whatever, which would have only cost a couple of quid a week. I was on a higher lease thing. And he looked at me kind of sadly, not angrily, sadly, because he'd never done this before. It was a stack system. It was a couple of quid, but I hadn't got the money for it. The following day, my friend Vincent arrived on his bicycle and he took my worldly possessions, which were some clothes in two black refuse sacks, and he took them to his dad's garage in Crumlin. And I walked out of that flat with no place to live. So that was pretty low.
Where did you go?
I went to the bus stop on Dame Street and I watched the buses pass by. But I didn't know where I was going. You know, I had my parents' house in Rathfarnham, perfectly good house where I would have been perfectly welcome and perfectly loved.
But you didn't
want to
go back.
That was giving up. That was absolutely giving up on the dream. So I waited at that bus stop and I watched all the buses go by and I decided that moment that whatever step I took had to be in the right direction. So that's as low as it got. And it was that decision that whatever I did next, no matter how small that decision, that it should be, to allow myself mistakes, but it should be in the right direction.
And the right direction was you met Terry Keane and you met Terry Keane's mother and you met Terry Keane's daughter and you got married. And
yes, I met Terry, who is a very well-known journalist and social columnist and wonderful patron.
Did she ever give you any advice?
Yeah.
Apart from cop on, you bloody little Egypt.
She gave me that advice.
You've got so much talent. Don't waste it.
She did give me that advice. She wanted me to. So I'd won a competition in the RDS and I was the person of the day. Also, somebody had bought. Do you remember that?
But you couldn't use the medal to pay your rent or stop your CD system.
No,
from
somebody
being
broke in and stole
away.
It. No, that's right. And it was a gold medal.
But that was stolen.
It was stolen. The two of them stolen.
So you were. If it wasn't for bad luck, you'd have no luck at all.
That's it. And so I was the person today. Also, there was a house for sale outside Dublin called Hume Wood. And because I had won the medal in the RDS, I was the garden designer of the day. I was asked down to see Hume Wood by a woman,
Renata Coleman.
By Renata Coleman. And because I'd been asked to see, I was the guy who'd been asked to see Hume Wood, I became the person for that month in terms of gardens. And Terry always liked the person, so I was asked would I go and have a look at her garden. Helen Dillon, the brilliant Helen Dillon, who lived down the road, designed the garden on the back of an envelope, and I worked in the garden building this design. And it was quite extraordinary, as you'll know from knowing Terry, that whoever you are, whoever you were in the house, you were invited to participate. So if the family were having breakfast, come and sit with us. If they were having a beer after, when everybody arrived home from work, come and sit with us. If you were the gardener, if you were the electrician, if you were the biggest socialite in New York, come and sit with the family and whatever. And that's what happened. I got to know them. Terry realised I was in kind of dire straits. She said, right, here's the deal. All my kids have moved away. You can have a room in my house and you can have my car and get yourself back on your feet. And that was extraordinary.
How long did it take you to get back on your feet?
It was a couple of years, because what happened then, Terry and then her daughter Justine said, do you know, you're brilliant, we believe in you. And I couldn't believe.
Did you believe in yourself though?
No, I didn't. I knew I had a dream. Yeah, I did believe in myself. That's wrong. I'd worked out at this stage that it wasn't wrong to have a dream. It wasn't wrong to want to take contemporary influence. I didn't know if I could do it or not, but I knew I had to give myself the best possible chance of making gardens that were different. And it was those people and then this idea that I had of going over to London and trying and doing a garden at a show there that began to change everything.
But I'm just curious, there's a great story I love of you, of you cycling around to the Edges house in Rathfarnham.
Yes.
Just, you know, on the...
I worked.
Why?
Well, I was always a hard worker. And I think you two, when they were breaking out at that stage, 79, 80, 81, 82, amazed me, because their music was very raw. It was quite lost. You know, some of those songs like Out of Control and stuff like that, I really identified with. I was absolutely lost. I couldn't believe this raw music was coming from my hometown. I worked in a shop, in a newsagent around mines when I wasn't in my gardens, because I worked every hour there was at something or other. And Edge came in for pizza next door to the pizza place, and I knew he was living in Maria Walsh had a house. Oh, no, she subsequently lived in his house. So just up the road. And I toddled up one night to tell him how great I thought the band were.
You just cycled up. What age were you?
I wasn't young. I was 19 or 20.
And you just knocked at his door and
yeah.
Did he answer?
He did.
And what did you say?
I said, I think you're great. And he said, that's great. Tell the office, write to the office, and thank you very much and goodbye.
And then you cycled off down the drive.
Then I cycled away. Yeah. Yeah. I thought they were great. I still think they're great.
Yeah. You had another less friendly encounter with another rock star, Bob Geldof.
Oh, well, then years later, of course, things were to change for me, and I found myself kind of prominent in London for a couple of years. And if you're prominent in London, you're invited everywhere. You get to know everybody, you get to meet everybody. And for me, it was a case of enjoying all that, but kind of rejecting it also. It wasn't anything to do with my life. Went along for a ride, absolutely loved it, had so much fun. And occasionally, because a lot of these things would involve prominent members of the Irish community, I'd run into Bob Geldof, who was another remarkable hero of mine. And, you know, never forget that Saturday of Live Aid. I loved the Rats when they came out. I loved his interview on the
Late Late Show
when he held up a mirror to the country. I thought it was all very human. And I loved the honesty of it. So I had a few run-ins with Bob in London.
Over what?
I don't know. He made it clear, very clear, that he didn't like me. And this, it didn't, first of all, I was amazed, first of all, that he even knew who I was. And secondly, I was amazed that he didn't like me, because what wasn't there to that? I was a young radical garden designer. And thirdly, it didn't bother me in the least that he didn't like me. Once or twice, once I ended up at a party that was being thrown in his honour, and all his mates invited me and said, this is going to be great and whatever. And Bob was just about to arrive, and it was in you know, a hotel suite that he had. Myself and Justine were there. We were giggling away, and I said, listen, let's leave before he comes. And, you know, I did kind of clarify all this. He came, he's a very regular visitor, as are a lot of the rock stars, to the Chelsea Flower Show. And he came along one day, and we were still building the garden, and he shouted at lad. He liked whatever we were doing, and he said, whose garden is this? To Laz, who were building. And I looked up and he saw me and I said, Bob, it's mine. I said, come on in. And he had to come in then, and he was with the girlfriend, and I came in and I introduced him to everyone and I said, everyone, this is Bob. He doesn't like me, but I don't really care. And he laughed at that, and he gave, RT were there at the time, he gave them an interview. So whatever, you know, he's an amazing reactionary guy, and I was just quite amused. But, you know, others of the rock discipline did like me. I remember
who liked you?
Nights. Well, Primal Scream were very big. I didn't realise. I went to, every year I used to go to Jules.
You're telling me Bobby Gillespie's a big into gardening?
No, I don't know. Actually, Bobby, I met him at the Hootenanny, but his bandmates came up to me after the gig, and they said, Dermot, do you know where the Blue Peter Garden is? And I said, I do. So I brought them round. It was 3 a.m. and I brought them round. We found this iconic garden that had been built in the 1970s by a gardener called Percy Thrower, an all-time gardener, and the cast of Blue Peter. And my cousin was with me, and he's a real hip. His name is Neil Gavin, real hip rock and roll and fashion photographer. And he was snapping away, and he says, you know who these lads are? This is Primal Scream. I am the two.
Were they asking you how to grow opium fields in Brixton or
no,
something?
No, we rearranged, let's say, the Blue Peter Garden that evening, but we were caught and kicked out of the BBC at White City. I went to their dressing room in between. God, what a mess that was. But, you know, other people were brilliant, like Charlene Spiteri, you know, Charlene from Texas. Always had a lot of fun with her. And, various bits and bits.
What's the maddest garden you've ever been asked to make?
I never like when I'm asked to make a mad garden. It's never a good introduction, because there has to be a different feeling behind it. If you're just asked to make something mad, it just doesn't work. If you're given a blank canvas and go and do your thing, you have to be inspired by something. I think one of the most fun was we did a mechanical garden for Harrods at the Chelsea Flower Show that every 15 minutes put on a performance. But that was kind of arts and crafts in Old English. We once did an Art Deco garden with, it was inspired by U2. Do you remember U2 did the Pop Mart tour? Do you remember they had a giant lemon?
Lemon, yeah.
So we did a giant lemon that revolved in a garden, but when it stopped, it was
I think your mate garden. The Edge was in the middle of it, wasn't it?
So that was quite a bit of fun. But we've done all sorts and all sorts of different places.
So do you ever say, look, sorry, this can't be done? Or
I wouldn't. I'd say maybe we're not right for each other. If somebody said they just want it for the effect, for the dramatic effect, I like a garden to come from a real place. I think you start off with the ground, with the plants. You understand? And then if somebody wants something different, I'm always up for it. But it must be a real inspiration. You don't do things just for the sake of doing. So it's a complex process your head goes through. It drives you demented. You can't come up with an idea, whatever. All your mates or the team say, oh, don't worry, you always get it. It'll be fine, and whatever. And it drives you absolutely mental. And then the idea comes.
So were you always driven demented by this? Like from a young age, it's just a different form of it now, is it?
For a design solution, yeah. It's not a happy process to go through. Sometimes it's very obvious. Sometimes you see it immediately. Sometimes it takes time. And it decides when it comes, your muse. And then when you get it, you refine it. Then you really believe in it.
And do you live on emotion then?
Yes.
Is that why I'm talking to the man who famously clamped the clampers.
Well, that was...
Tell me about that story.
Oh, I was out in Dublin with the lads one night and I saw the clamper van going around Temple Bar. And, of course, we were giddy. You know, I'd lived a period of my life through giddy excitement. I was back home for a weekend being celebrated in Dublin, going around the place. And I saw this guy clamping a car. So I took a clamp out of the back of his car. And I clamped
out of the clamper's car?
Yeah. He was livid. But it was a bit of fun, wasn't it? You know, it's the thing you do at 2 a.m. with that sort of...
What would you do with Michael D's garden?
I think I find the house and the gardens a bit austere, a bit too English, and people are a bit too scared to do anything. So it's big, wide open expanses. Maybe the British aesthetic plays too much of an important part. And if I got in, I'd hire a garden designer like Mary Reynolds, somebody who's wild and Irish, to get her to create some maybe more poetic spaces.
What's a poetic garden, if you don't mind me asking?
A poetic garden is a place that creating an environment with more native plants, with more native trees and shrubs, more intimate areas, with raw materials, things that haven't been influenced by maybe Palladium architecture, Georgian architecture. So in the garden, really beautiful stone, really beautiful water, walk from garden to garden, space to space, relying maybe on the colour green, what you might expect to find in the wilds of Kerry in the Curragh in County Kildare. Just something a little bit.
How would you react if someone very rich said, look, I have a big garden, just put down a lot of plastic grass, fake plastic grass?
More and more people are asking for fake plastic grass, and it certainly has its place. In fact, I think you even asked me to come to your garden, but then years ago, Barry Egan, fake plastic grass.
But what is that like an insult to someone like you?
No, it has its
place. Is it like giving the Edge a kind of a xylophone or something?
No, it's not. It's another material, and you have to, if it's appropriate to use, it's appropriate to use. Have I done gardens in the past that I wouldn't be particularly overjoyed with? Yes. Have I, 10 years ago, asked a member of the studio to, you take that project, I'll look over it. You give them what they want, and if it's okay, I'll sign it off. Yeah, that has happened in the past, but I don't like when it happens because I love the opportunity to create a garden.
And could you do something? Like, I always imagined you could do something at Dublin Airport.
I've always wanted to do something at Dublin Airport. Always wanted to do it. Yeah, because
people could, you know, land and see this amazing Willy Wonka kind of garden.
Well, there I probably wouldn't, even though I'm hugely inspired by the Willy Wonka movie, and we show it 24/7 in
your new shop
in the shop
on Georgia Street. Let's give it a plug.
Dublin Airport wouldn't be the place for that. Dublin Airport would be the place for something, a more contemporary Irish vision, but something that is arresting, something that wakes you up, something that makes you feel proud of. Mind you, I'm a bit suspicious often of national pride, but something that's of the place, but modern. I'd love to do that.
So are you still on the BBC doing loads of shows over there?
We've just completed filming a new series based on, you know, the Bake Off programme where they have this competition for bakers. We've just filmed The Great British Garden Design or something like that. That's the working title. It'll be on in the spring with Nikki Chapman. You know Nikki, who's fascinating to work with. She was the manager of the Spice Girls, Take That, of Bowie for a while. Can you imagine that? So her stories are quite extraordinary. And also having the Simon Cowell, Simon Fuller thing going on. So we've just finished, herself and myself, present that.
Have you got anything coming up with RTE?
Well, we have an idea for something, so which I'm sure we'll do in a couple of years. Quite an exciting show, but not at the moment. At the moment, I've been working with Dunn Stores on this rollout of an idea. I went to New York a couple of years ago, just after Trump was elected, with a friend of mine. And there was so much anger in New York about this, because it's a very liberal city. I remember bumping into Gabriel Byrne in a cafe, and myself and my mate introducing ourselves and asking his take on it. And he was so upset and angry. The city was absolutely electric with anger. But I saw this very trendy garden shop with young people going in, people in 18, 19, 20, very hip people going into this plant shop. And I looked at it and I thought, God, maybe we could do something like that at home. I went to Amsterdam and found another shop called Wilderness. I went to East London and found a shop called Prick that sells just cacti.
That would go well over here.
So I wrote, actually on that trip, I wrote to Dunn Stores and said, how about doing this and how about rolling out, understanding the need of young people to have houseplants, and you know, they can't afford apartments they can't afford houses. They want to look after something, but they don't want a pet. Plants are the in thing. So we've just started that, and it's been a great journey over the last year. And
because your shop's kind of rock and roll. I was just in there earlier this morning.
It has the
and
best.
You're playing Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah. We have Bowie. We have a playlist. I went. There's a vinyl record player, record shop around the corner. I went and asked them to create a playlist for me. So the best of bossa nova, one day jazz, soul, pop, and classical. And it's just brilliant. We have great coffee, nice little cakes, the most brilliant plants. We do workshops, show people how to make